Welcome to another edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very accomplished woman, Pooja Bhaku, on the show. Pooja, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Pooja is currently a tapestry artist. She's a creative writer, she's a blogger, and she's a poet. And she spent a large part of her life as an advertising professional. So Pooja, tell me a little bit about your early career.
Okay, so my career started in a pretty unstructured manner because I came from a service background. But I was very keen to do my own business and be my own boss. So I did my undergrad in home science and my postgrad in public administration. And so my career has seen three very distinct phases or innings. And the first phase, which lasted from the age of 20 to about 26, was the most challenging. And you know, it was there were a lot of personal as well as professional challenges. But of course, there was a lot of learning and there were life lessons which helped me have a far smoother subsequent innings. So my first career idea came from my passion for embroidery and handicrafts and crochet. So I put together a team of some 14-15 women and we started to create handcrafted sweaters for children. And we were supplying to known brands such as Childcare and Effuse in Delhi. And my own brand was called PJ Crafts after my name Pooja. So PJ Crafts was a lot of fun, but since it was a seasonal business, I started to look for some additional challenge work-wise. So I was aware that advertising and communication was a new line of business that was not only creative, it was also lucrative. So I decided to take the plunge. And but my funding partner in this business was based out of Chandigarh. So my family relocated to Chandigarh. And Chandigarh, initially, I did try to carry on with PJ Crafts, but the market dynamics there were very different from Delhi. So also, advertising turned out to be a very demanding business. So PJ Crafts had to be relegated to the status of a hobby, and I got full throttle into advertising. So initially, I dabbled in various departments of advertising, but I soon found my forte in on the creative side. So then I consolidated my knowledge of creatives. You know, I learned various designing softwares. I got into art direction and everything related to advertising. So that was a tremendous learning curve. But then some unexpected personal challenges happened and they marred my career too.
And were you working with some large agency or did you have your own agency?
That was my own agency. And in fact, we became, that subsequently happened that we became the largest billing agency in the region. But so these personal challenges marred my career and I became a victim of a fraud in my own agency where my resignation was forged. And so I was unceremoniously ousted from the board of directors.
Of your own company?
Of my own company, yeah. So, and suddenly I had no money to pay my bills and, you know, to pay my rent and to foretold those litigation expenses. So that was a very challenging period and I my career hit rock bottom that time. So, but then like they say that life is a 10-speed bicycle and, you know, you have gears which you don't use unless you really get an opportunity. So this was my time to use all my unused gears. And so I started from the scratch once again and I built up the a new agency, brick by brick. And so that was the starting of my second phase. And initially I had very limited staff, so I was heading all the departments myself, you know, business development, marketing and creatives and all. But then I somehow marketing seemed to blur my design sensibilities. So I wanted somebody to look after the business angle so that I could concentrate on my core strength, which was advertising.
Creative, yeah.
So that is where Sunil, who's now my husband, he came in. And Sunil had extensive experience in marketing and he also had very good contacts. So Sunil came on board and fortunately our professional sensibilities were completely aligned. So after that, I think within the next 10 years, we had mopped up all the top clients, the top budgets, and we became the largest billing agency in the North once again. And then in 2002, we relocated to Delhi to further expand our business. And we got into TV commercials, into outdoors, into online advertising. So through online channels, we were also servicing international clients. So another 10 years went by, you know, again, work and more work. And then I think we were in our mid-40s. And both of us, one day we were just sitting and, you know, reminiscing or reflecting about our career graph over the last 20 years. And then we said, you know, what's happening? We have only one string to our conversational violin. Every time we sit together, we start to think about how we'll make more money and all. So, it was literally like going on this, you know, the corporate rat race. We had actually, we were foregoing a lot of other things that constitute a holistic living. So our bucket list was waiting, our foreign travels were waiting, our auxiliary interests were waiting, and we were just riding this corporate treadmill in spite of the fact that our retirement corpus was kind of in place, you know, nothing very ostentatious, but it was enough to take care of our aging plans. So then we asked ourselves that now at this stage, do we want more money at the cost of being busy 24/7? Or do we now want more time while age is still on our side? So, because what happens is after a certain age, all money can do is pay for your kidneys, you know, or your stents, or it can pay for your bypass surgeries and your knee replacements.
And I've often said to people, you know, one more zero is not going to change your life.
It doesn't matter, because beyond a point, it can't do anything. So that is when we decided that day we touch 50, we will retire. And so that's what happened when we...
So you sold your agency then?
Yes, we passed it on to new promoters. And then we opened ourselves to all the experiences that a non-regimented life has to offer. So for me, it was literally like, you know, unexplored, big-eared vistas are opened up and the world was my oyster. And after, I think, 32 years, for the first time, I was time rich. So, and I decided to make the most of it. So that was the beginning of my third innings.
So let's talk about the third thing. What are the things that you are doing now?
Yes. So in my third innings, I started my singing classes.
Okay.
I joined dance classes. I joined readers clubs. I joined writers clubs. I started my own blog called Planet Puja, where I talk about life experiences and social and political issues. And then I started to write poetry. Not those very philosophical kinds, but, you know, the from the heart variety. And in fact, recently my poem, Awaiting the Muse, it won the New York Literary Magazine Award too.
Wow.
Yeah. So now I'm writing a book, which is an anthology of my poems and my writings and my life experiences. And for the last 3 years, I'm running this initiative called Tapestry for Charity. Because tapestry making was a hobby which I was practicing right through my all these years.
So let's look at your various interests one by one.
Okay.
You know, let's start with Tapestry for Charity.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about the scope of work you do.
Charity was something which was always very, it was an integral part of my bucket list. So once I retired, I got associated with a lot of organizations like the Earth Foundation, the Learning Ladder, Akshar Gyan, Connecting Suicide Helpline. So I was teaching underprivileged children and I was extending free designing support to various NGOs. But still, I would feel a little guilty following my passion for embroidery. And my friends had been urging me to have exhibitions because my entire house is packed with, you know, all my art and all. So then I had this eureka moment where I said, why don't I go commercial with my hobby? And from the proceeds, I do, you know, I do charity from there. So that is when I started this initiative called Tapestry for Charity.
And, you know, when I was reading about you, you mentioned that... you are turning an idea into a work of art. Tell me the process and what do you do?
See, turning an idea into a work of art requires a combination of two things, basically. It's firstly, it's a fertile imagination, and then it's a vivid visualization. Because when you see an idea or a muse, you should be able to split it down to the absolute basic, or you should be able to layer it up to its most complex form on the canvas of your mind. And in a painting, what happens is you... you can correct a creative anomaly by simply, you know, using the brush. But when in a tapestry, it's very difficult to unpick what you've done. So it becomes all the more important to first have the entire idea in your mind before you start making it.
I see. Okay. So, you know, for our listeners and for our viewers, Can you help us to understand what is tapestry?
What is tapestry? Tapestry is basically, there are two kinds. One is the loom tapestry, which is done with machines and all.
Which are curtains, is it?
Not curtains exactly, but...
any kind of fabric?
They're woven. Those tapestries are woven on the loom. Mm-hmm. But this kind, the one I do, which is patipua, it's a stitch called patipua. Mm-hmm. So there I take net and I sketch a portrait on that and I paint it roughly.
Okay.
And then I do the stitch, which is patipua or needle point, it's called.
Okay.
So this is filled up from one end to the other, and that's called a tapestry.
Okay. And you mentioned that, you know, you have reinvented needle point embroidery,
yes,
which is a European art form, yeah, adapted with Indo-ethnic dimension.
Yeah.
And I'm just quoting you.
Yeah,
I can't claim to say I understand everything.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, what does this mean?
Okay. See, patipua or needlepoint, both the names are, you can use them interchangeably. So these are basically, it's a European art form which was associated with the ruling classes and the elite of the 18th century. So my college library had some very amazing books on patipua. And because of my interest in embroidery, I devoured all those books and I learned the nuances of the craft. So that was always there with me. And when my PJ crafts became just a hobby, so what I used to do was source these cross-stitch kits from the market. So that used to have, you know, it was a packet which had some threads and it would have a piece of painted canvas. Mm-hmm. But that canvas would have very unimaginative designs and all. So I wasn't very happy doing it. And I was toying with the idea of starting to paint my own canvas. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, what happened was one of the wool suppliers whom I was meeting when PJ Crafts was running. Mm-hmm. So that person's wool store had a short circuiting.
Okay.
So his entire wool collection got burnt from the edge. Mm-hmm. So he had these woolen strands, you know, burnt from both ends, and he didn't know what to do with them. He had a whole storeroom full of that. So he said, can you please help me out with this? So out of nothing but pure sympathy, I told him, I said, okay, I'll buy this entire room from you. Mm-hmm. So I put my own lock outside his room. And now I didn't know what to do with those strands. Mm-hmm. So then I had another eureka moment where I thought, why don't I use my knowledge of patipua and I use these threads and I paint a canvas, mm-hmm, and then, you know, create tapestries. Mm-hmm. Now what I wanted was inspiration or a muse to start this work. So I happened to travel to Rajasthan, and there I saw these Rajasthani men with those, you know, those strong jawlines and those lush mustaches and those colorful turbans. So I said, that's my muse. Mm. So then I started to, I took a lot of pictures of these people, and I came back, and because I was aware of these designing software, so I made digital portraits on Photoshop. Mm. So then I painted on canvas and transferred that design there, and amazing, I embroidered. So that is how I say that it's an Indo-ethnic dimension to
So this is a very, very labor intensive.
It is, yeah.
In today's world, do you see the younger people take it up more, or is it just something that you are being able to pursue because of your passion?
I don't think the current generation has that kind of patience to indulge in something like this. So they will appreciate what you've done, and you know, they'll really admire an intricate or labor intensive tapestry. But they wonder, why would somebody spend 6 to 8 months doing something
like that? Yeah. Correct. You know, again, just for all our viewers and listeners who will be listening to you and me talk, you know, every time you go somewhere in Europe and look at the museums and all those palaces, what you see hanging on the walls is what is tapestry.
Yeah.
And that is what Pooja is doing. Amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
So one tapestry takes about 4 to 8 months, even 9 months to create.
Easily. And it is a labor of love.
It is. Mm-hmm.
So, have you ever thought of doing an exhibition of what you're doing?
I have done exhibitions.
Oh, you have done?
Yeah. In fact, I'm also now showcasing with the leading home furnishing stores.
Okay.
And I have a select clientele, in fact, in the US, in the UK, in Australia. So, you know, I buy my tapestries on a regular basis, which I use for charity. So,
Fantastic. So, Pooja, let's move to your next passion, which is writing.
Yes.
You are a creative writer, you are a blogger, and you are a poet.
Yes.
My first question to you is, what makes a good writer?
Yeah, good writer, I think it that has to be the most important aspect of a good writer, is that it has, there has to be an inborn, organic, and very authentic passion for the written word. Because if you don't have that passion, you will never bother about the, you know, those nuances of a craft, which separates good writing from ordinary writing.
Correct.
So for me, a good writer is a little like a wine connoisseur or a sommelier, because he knows how to blend different textures and tonalities and, you know, vintage of different words on the palate of his intellect, and then create beautiful writing.
Okay. And when you write, do you write with a fixed schedule, or do you write only when you have the urge to write?
I think I'll go with the second part. I love writing, and I really enjoy the process. And I think it's power yoga for the mind, actually, you know, to write. But since my first love is embroidery, so this writing has always played second fiddle to it.
Correct.
So I write when I feel very strongly about a certain issue, or I write sometimes to declutter my mind and, you know, to streamline my own thought process. Then when I create a tapestry, I write a poem on the tapestry. Or I'll write for a loved one or some friend. So, and then also my book. So when there are, on a good day, I will write chapter after chapter for my book. And then I will go completely off the writing radar. So, but I've seen that I'm more focused writing at night, because you get unlimited hours, you know, and there's nobody to really puncture your thought bubble and talk with something.
Or disturb you.
Yeah, exactly.
The fact that you are able to do such intense cross stitches
means
that you've obviously got a very, very good memory. But let me ask you one more question on writing before we move to the next section, which is that, you know, you blog, you write, and you're a poet. What makes a good story?
Firstly, I think it should have an enticing opening. It should have a middle that is engaging. And then the ending has to be powerful, so that it stays with the person. And also, there should be no fluff. There should be, one should get to the point. You know, and that's what I wrote like about fiction.
Correct.
There's just too much fluff happening.
Correct.
So these kind of things.
Very interesting. So let me ask you a few questions personally now. Over the years, and you've done so many different things, you know, are there any people who have had a strong influence on your life? And if yes, what have you learned from them?
Okay. My father had a big influence on me, because he was, for his encyclopedic knowledge, and he had this self-deprecating humor, you know. Then my brother-in-law, for his philanthropic and his charitable initiatives. So there have also been a lot of person who served as excellent bad examples. So
sure.
You see them and you learn
and
exactly
you learn
what not to do.
Yeah.
But I think my most important mentor and my guide has been life itself. So you can say that I'm an illuminist of the school of life.
Okay. And what would be some of your learnings? I mean, you know, example, you did mention that, you know, in your first creative agency that you did, someone forged your signature.
Yes.
What have been some of your learnings?
So I think first learning has been that don't keep all your financial eggs in one basket.
Okay.
Because there should always be more than one revenue stream, so that in case one has a lull, there's the other one to back you up. So that's very important.
Okay. Okay.
And also, if something is not working despite your best efforts, then don't get into analysis paralysis, and, you know, don't start playing the blame game. Just close that chapter, move on, and there's always something better waiting for you around the corner.
Okay.
Also, time management, and you know, it's very important to use your time constructively and intelligently, because I personally believe that one should spend more time on the infotainment than entertainment. You should not get intimidated by other people's successes.
Yes. Yeah.
You should get
be happy
inspired
with what you have. I agree with you.
And finally, also, it's you must constantly upgrade and upskill, because in today's fast-paced times, if you let go, you're gone.
Amazing. That's true. Amazing learnings.
Yeah.
So my next question to you is that, what would be three words that define puja? And if you can explain each of those words to me.
Okay. So my friends would say that I am creatively inclined, although I secretly suffer from this imposter syndrome, I think, you know, this, I don't know how it's happening, whatever's happening.
Sure.
And then my colleagues would say that I am commitment-oriented, because for me, a commitment or a deadline is absolutely sacred. And then my family would say that I'm a enthu cutlet, because the moment I get a project to work on, I'm like super excited and I go on this overdrive.
Okay.
That's wonderful.
And again, my next question, and I've got time for two more questions. The next question is that you've done so many different things. But when was the last time you did something for the first time?
Okay. I love that question, because what's the date today? 11th?
11th.
Yeah. So today is the first time that I'm giving a live interview like this. And I've got butterflies the size of dinosaurs in my stomach.
Okay.
So that is
wonderful. So my last question to you, Pooja, is on failure. Okay. And this is a question that I ask all my guests. you know, as Indian parents, we don't teach children that it's okay to fail.
Right.
We just keep telling all our children, you have to come first, you have to be ahead of everybody. And I've often heard parents say that, you know, when the child is in the top three, why are you making friends with people who are in the bottom of the class? And all this manifests itself in our behavior patterns, which is that, you know, my car must be first in the traffic light. I don't care what happens to the traffic.
Yeah.
The moment an aircraft full of Indians lands, irrespective of where I'm sitting, I must be the first out of the plane. Creating chaos. And we all can identify with these.
Yeah.
And yet we fail all the time. So my question to you is, what have been your learnings from your failures or your mistakes?
See, a part of my learnings would be what I told you about, you know, in my earlier question, because that came out of my experiences work-wise. But I think the best thing about failure is that it prepares you to be a winner in the next round. And also we learn far more from our failures than we do from our learnings.
Correct.
So others would be at the cost of repeating myself.
Okay, fair enough. So my last question then is, do you have any regrets?
No, I don't think they are regrets, because every time, you know, life has given me a slap, something, I've come out doing better than before.
Wonderful.
So I won't have any regrets.
Wonderful. Pooja, thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
I hope your bucket list it gets ticked off every year.
Yes, it is getting, that's what I'm doing.
And yes. Incredible.
Why should only one thing define you for the rest of your life? Why shouldn't there be multiple things?
So many things to do.
Yes.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for the Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.